So the first thing we need to do is make sure you identify yourself, please. So would you be so kind?
Yeah, this is Damon, otherwise known as Badly Drawn Boy, all the way from England.
Okay, so I want to start with the important stuff. This is the big, this will tell you the tenor of the interview right here, that this is going to be a very serious, deep, dark, incisive interview.
Okay.
The vote on the best fish and chip shop in the UK, and you're playing a gig at the winning place. Mm. So now, this is big news.
Is it?
This is huge.
Well, it's not. Huge. It's going to be the tiniest gig ever, probably, because most chippies in England are tiny, so.
Now, what about, I didn't see on the list, my favorite one in Kensington, which is it starts with an H, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's been there, like Harigna, it's been there for like 400 years, and I guess it's where all the tourists go. That's the chippy place for the tourists. You know which place I'm talking about?
Personally, no, I'm not very well up on London.
Yeah, it was in Kensington.
Not Manchester.
Yeah, no, is there a difference between Mancunian fish and chips and London? I mean, when you get up north? Because
yeah,
KDR produces from the north, so I'm just curious to know if there's a big, are the chips different?
It's certainly more expensive the further south you go.
Is it everything, though?
Generally, yeah, but you can find spots that aren't expensive, but the fish and chips vary all around the country. You could get gravy in Preston that has mushrooms in it for no explainable reason, which is a bit offensive where I come from, because you don't want mushrooms in your gravy.
This is a good discussion so far. It was very important, right? But this lets you know where it's going to go. Okay, am I right that today we are on the day that Born in the UK is being released? Isn't today the day?
Well, yeah, today's the 16th of October, which is in England is the day, and the UK is the day Born in the UK comes out. I think in the US and Canada it's tomorrow, the 17th.
Because they decided for some reason that one day, giving the UK the one day, would make a massive marketing difference.
Well, I don't know. I believe releases come out on Tuesdays here for some reason.
Do they really?
You should know. I don't know.
I'm just wondering, Zane Lowe's playlist or something?
No, but when I completed the record in July and then handed it to the record company, all finished, they came back a few days later with two release dates. One was the single, Nothing's Gonna Change Your Mind, which was gonna come out on the 2nd of October, which is my birthday. And the second date was the 16th for the album, which was my mum and parents' wedding anniversary. But so I was really pleased because those were just a fluke, chance happenings, which this album is all about, chance happenings. And but the date for the single got shifted by a week. I'm a bit depressed, to be honest, because the single came out in England and it's my lowest chart position for probably 6 years, so it ain't going well.
This is kind of a comeback album, and it really was brave. I was reading the bio earlier today for you to put the story of the quote. I'm not going to mince words. You called it a failed album. You know, you said, you know, to put that in your bio was very brave, but it gives me a sense of perspective on why this one is so joyous. And in my opinion, and again, I've played every one of them from day one, it's your best so far.
Well, yeah, there's no reason for me to talk about the failure in a way, because I certainly don't want to bring people down. I want them to enjoy this record, but I think for me it seemed like, because of a record that didn't work out, this set of songs came out of the quagmire of that disaster. So it seemed important to, part of this record was that other record that I didn't release. You know, it was part of the process of this one becoming coming around, because if I had finished that last record and released it, I would be now on tour singing those songs, and these songs would never have been written. So it is part of the thing that I feel I should mention. And also, it's the first time I had a stumbling block, really, in my short career so far. I hadn't really experienced that kind of feeling of things not going right. But it'll come out. One day I'll rejig those songs and put them out as some kind of...
Of course you will. But that's part of the joy of doing all this. So then came Lemon Jelly, and everything kind of changed.
I mean, what I did was I went in the studio and meticulously tried to record a song a day, just enough of an idea of a song to know that it was good and it could happen if you spent more time on it. So between September and December, I had, you know, close to 100 more new songs, and then I decided I needed a producer to help me sift through this stuff and make sense of it, and Nick Franklin from Lemon Jelly was the choice that was made by me and my management. And he just seemed to have an energy when he came in the studio. Like, keep me doing things and pushing me forward and making me try things out. Because I was still a bit down on myself for not having a success with the first record attempt. So I was still coming out of that. So this whole record I was making under a new different pressure of like, if I fail again, I'm going to quit because I can't stand this anymore.
So let's launch into the opening track and really get even deeper. We might as well just go right down. So to me, it was kind of a discussion with yourself and kind of a self-analysis of your place at this time and in this world. And yet, despite what you say, which starts out a little positive and then works its way through all sorts of twists and turns in that, what is that opening track before we get to Born in the UK, 60 seconds, if that?
Yeah.
You know, it's really beautiful. You know, you listen to it, and again, I'm a father of a five-year-old little girl, you know, and so family person. And I could not listen to it. It really hit me. And then when it slams into Born in the UK, it's quite the little experience.
Yeah, the start of the record's a bit weird because once I got the song Born in the UK, I sort of knew that was going to be on the album. And then I had to make the painful decision of whether I can call this record Born in the UK, because I thought maybe people just think that's too gratuitous or too loaded a title or too throwaway or something, or maybe it's just a nod to Springsteen and nothing else. But I think it's a bit deeper than that. It's about serendipity. Like, nobody chooses where they're born, and where I was born partly influenced the path I've taken and has brought me to where I am today. So you never know the difference because you live with what you're given. But I felt the need to qualify the title track by putting in this little thing at the start, this little dialogue between two sides of my character, perhaps. I thought about doing it with my kids, them asking me questions, or me asking my dad questions, or a father figure of some sort. But I ended up doing it as a conversation between myself, and then a little. It's like a little mini sweet segue into the title track. So it starts in the present, then goes back to when I was born with the first main song.
And now we'll get back to the album in a second, but this is the beginning of a very short US tour, Boston, Toronto, New York, San Francisco, and then back home for the holidays. Now, has it been normal for you to do a tour where people, for all intents and purposes, and the odds are pretty darn good, unless they've bootlegged them from somewhere, have not heard the music yet?
Is it unusual?
Yeah, is that unusual for you, or is that commonplace?
I'd say it's more unusual than commonplace, yeah. I've been playing now for 2 months plus since finishing the album. I've been around Europe, a few dates in the UK, over here. I was in Seattle, then back home, and then back to this small US tour and Canada. And I've never played so many gigs before a record came out, and it's probably partly the reason why I'm feeling apprehensive, because I've never had to do this so early before.
It's tricky.
Well, it's making me question Well, the record's just out today, but I'm not even at home, so I don't know how things are going. The single didn't go too well, and I'm feeling like, well, what do I have to do? And, you know, I feel I deserve more as an artist, and it isn't really, really happening for me. I can't help but feel a little bit, I don't know.
But you are doing a good thing. You are donating some of the profits to Oxfam, right? Mm. For the UK leg, so that's certainly a...
Well, yeah,
a really super terrific thing to do.
Well, I try and help out a few organisations that I've always cared about, Oxfam being one of them, and we just also eBayed the car.
I was going to go there. Yeah, the piano car. I saw the video. I was like, and actually, I'll ask you this. I'm going to skip a question, but, you know, are you thinking about doing, you know, other cars, drum cars and accordion cars? And
that'd be pretty good.
What do you think? You think we could, like, make a lot, you and I, like, if the records don't sell a lot, we could just make a lot of money doing instrumental cars?
Well,
it's got possibilities.
It's already made a huge loss because it cost £10,000 to modify that car to a piano car, and it went for £2,500 on eBay. So it's already lost £7,500. So it doesn't look like.
But the PR value alone, Damon. Come on.
It doesn't look like a viable business, in my opinion.
You know what? I'm in these businesses too. There are no viable artistic businesses. Come on. Who are you kidding? You say that, and this is just, it hit me very personally because of the kind of music I play. You say Nothing Can Change Your Mind has a Bach rockness to it. And not as in Bach and rock, but as in young Bert. So his best of Bach set material is regular material for me. There's regularly Dionne Warwick and all of those guys on my show. That's just normal. So, I mean, is there any reason to apologize for making beautiful, lasting melodies? You know, because it's kind of, you know, in this day and age, to say what you're saying, you're just saying that this is what you're out to do. You're out to make beautiful melodies, you know, and that's, and make really good, well-written songs.
Well, that's just sort of the way my writing's evolved, and I always had a penchant for melody. That's my, probably my, if I had one strength, melody is it. Lyrics have never been my strong point, although I work hard at those, and I even get some credit for those these days, which I'm pleased about. But or people have always said at least certain phrases and things are good. I do my best with lyrics, but melody's the natural thing that I've got going on, and that's what I always try and remain true to, really. And Bacharach, a lot of these things I grew up in the 70s with, Bacharach being one of them, and it comes through occasionally in a song or two. There's a couple of songs on this record that I think are very tinged with that, and it's not something I could plan, it just seems to happen.
Well, no, it's what it should be. Has Nick Hornby heard the new record?
I'd like to think so. I'm not in touch with Nick, although we did become fairly friendly. I'd like to think he'd...
It's so up his alley, obviously.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's strange because people ask me about the Springsteen thing, and me and Nick have discussed Springsteen over the years. We're both huge fans, particularly of the song Thunder Road that changed my life.
Absolutely.
Amongst other people's.
And mine too.
But people always say to me, "What, they don't see Bruce's music in mine." I'm saying, "Well, that's not a problem. I don't care." Well, there isn't.
If we're talking about the open, let's have a good discussion. If we're talking about the opening of Thunder Road, I will say that there's a lot of that got absorbed into your music by a long shot.
Well, yeah, but
not purposely, but just by nature of what's great melody and great, you know.
But what surprises me is that people expect it. Springsteen's inspiration to me was nothing to do with. There's so many other bands that inspired me or influenced me, even though it doesn't show in my music, but they make you want to make your own music. That's what inspiration is. They make you want to carry on. You know, when you listen to a great song by somebody else, you want to sit down and write your next great song. Springsteen's spark to me when I heard Thunder Road was just, I don't know, a song hadn't hit me like that ever before. I was only 14 or 15 years old when I heard that song. And I still feel the need to homage it in some way, because I'm not sure that if I hadn't heard that song in the way I found it, and it was a real chance moment when I found that song too, and if I hadn't had that song in my life, whether I would have tried to become something. I didn't want to be a musician at that point. I just knew by hearing that song I wanted to do something special, whatever it would be, something as special as that song, and that's what inspired me. And it changed my life, really, in the space of a day. I felt different. That song did something to me. I don't know why it did. So I'm still puzzled by that. I'm still thinking, what. And at the end of the album, I say, if we still haven't got a plan, let's listen to Thunder Road on the last song, because it did make me, it's still to this day, when I listen to it, makes me feel young and makes me feel like how I did 20 years ago, and I'm sure it does for any other fan of that, of his music.
Yeah, and for me, it's well over that. That would be 1970, I know exactly, I can tell you exactly when. That would be November 1975 in Syracuse, New York, and I was listening to the radio, and that came on. And they played the album end to end that day when it was released, like six times in a row.
And I have to remind myself of like the fact that now you know, I'm on my fifth or sixth visit to the US, and most of the other tours have been fairly extensive, you know, 20 or 30 days. And for my music to bring me over here to the place where someone like Springsteen came from, as well as Dylan and Tom Waits and Neil Young and loads of other indie artists like The Flaming Lips, Bobby Conn, Guided by Voices. Loads of music that I love from this continent, and you know, my music's brought me here to play, so I have to remind myself of that as a positive thing, because I mean, I think through this record I can perversely say I'm glad it put me through so much, made me think about quitting almost. And Springsteen went through exactly the same when you see the documentaries on the making of Born to Run. He didn't wake up every day thinking this. Well, one day
it was painful to watch for me. I watched it probably about a month ago, and that was pretty painful.
Yeah, well, I'm jealous I wasn't around earlier, but to be there when that record came out, because it took me, I had to rediscover all this music. But that's why it was so exciting as well. There was so much to listen to.
It doesn't matter you discovered it. That's all that counts, is you got there.
Yeah.
That's the point. I mean, as long as it doesn't matter what day you travel the road, it just matters that you've seen the sights that you need to see to guide your life and do what you need to do.
No, I agree, yeah.
So are you going to take the rest of these, how many tracks were there that you had to hone down to the chosen? Are you planning on putting those together into, are those going to be B-sides or?
I don't know, the thing is, you're never often compelled to go back to material. certainly not in
but
terms
there was
of
so much here.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the being so much. I was almost showing off to try and prove to myself I could do it. So it brought a lot of material and a lot of it. Like I said, I can prolifically write melodies, but supplying lyrics to those melodies is almost like a nightmare because there's so much of it. So,
yeah.
So that's the problem. But I mean, when it comes to making the next album, I don't think I'll feel compelled to go back to any of this loose material that didn't get used. I'll want to speak about the here and now. That's what making a record is, a document of the next phase. It's got to follow on from Born in the UK. So, but there will be, I will want to somehow release it in a long format of, say, an anthology at some point and say that's
cool.
That was the stuff that...
That becomes that fourth CD that we all look for.
Yeah, just right? I want to give people their money's worth in terms of, I wouldn't feel justified in releasing material that didn't make a record as a next record. It would have to be the material that didn't make that record, and it would be a gift almost to the...
Well, I'm ready for the anthology now, but that's just me.
Yeah.
So the last main thing we like to do, and it's our little secret, and I think you're going to have fun with this, at least I hope so, is we do a musical sandwich. We're going to take two of your songs as the bread, and it can be from the current album, it can be from, you know, Beast, it can be from anything you want, and then I'd like you to pick five or six songs in between of anything you've always wanted to play with your songs.
Be as spontaneous as I can here, because I could overthink it.
No, please overthink it. It's okay.
Well, the last track on the new album, One Last Dance, is quite an important track. I think that would be one of the breads. Should I go straight to the other bread, or?
It's your sandwich, my friend. I'm just the waiter.
I could make this a really hefty deli sandwich with...
Here we go, yes.
With, like, Jungle Land on there, because that's it's a long...
I have the time. Oh, no. I've played Bach concertos.
Please
play Jungle Land. It'll be my pleasure.
I also have to think of a song like Martha by Tom Waits, because that's one of those beautiful songs written about relationships that didn't happen. Do you know that song off Closing Time?
Yes.
I don't know. I'd have to go through stuff like Bobby Conn as well. I mean, and it's a bit obscure, sadly. Enough. The band are sounding good. I'm distracted.
That's okay.
This is off the new album, Made
yes,
to Be.
Yes, I know.
Sounds good.
we hope so.
there's a song called Whores by Bobby Conn off the last track on Golden Age, which is a brilliant song.
Sure.
That would be good. I'd like Song to the Siren by... This Mortal Coil, although the original by Tim Buckley. I don't know if that's available anywhere properly.
Would you prefer Tim Buckley? I can find it.
Either one. I mean, This Mortal Coil's different.
Maybe I'll play them both.
Yeah.
So people can hear the genesis of the tune.
That's funny. My mind's on a track of thinking. I don't know what... Let's go for... Well, Guided by Voices. I love it. There's a song called Echoes Myron on B-1000 album, which is my favourite album of theirs. Flaming Lips, what song would I go for off? Either Race for the Prize, or which is probably one of the biggest hits, or, but again, my favourite album by them was Transmissions of the Satellite Heart, so it would be She Don't Use Jelly or something off that record, or I suppose The Shining, because the other piece of bread was One Last Dance, and that was revisiting
The moment. Shining, that's right.
Yeah, revisiting the moment where I met Claire, my girlfriend, kind of, which both those songs do in a different way.
I think it's a pretty darn nifty sandwich myself. I'm looking forward to playing it.
It could be interesting.